Prepare to broadcast worldwide.
You've discovered TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Peyton takes the snap. Here comes the pressure. He stays in. Lost it toward the end zone. Touchdown! Pierre Garçon! Garçon's third postseason touchdown.
Manning in the shotgun puts Colley in motion. Looks in his direction. And it's picked off! It's picked off! It's Tracy Porter again! He's running free! He's going to go all the way! Hand out stretch! It is a state touchdown! 70 yards on the return by Porter! Get ready to party with the Lombardi, New Orleans!
It's already started.
The miracle in Miami has happened. The Saints have won the Super Bowl.
This is Wayne Larrabee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Coming up, our NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly featuring personnel analyst Nolan Naraki.
We've got the most in-depth scouting reports at every position you'll find anywhere, the top 50 on down, and winners and losers in the first round.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush, this is Wayne Larrabee. Welcome to our NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly. We're joined by PFW personnel analyst Nolan Naraki. Round one in prime time proved to be somewhat unpredictable at times, and it played out in a relatively snappy fashion. And Nolan, really the top of the draft, Sam Bradford, the quarterback, going to St. Louis, and Ndamukong Suh, the defensive tackle, to Detroit, Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle from Oklahoma, to Tampa Bay. That played out pretty much to script, didn't it?
It really did. I think there really weren't any surprises at the top of the draft. You know, we expected two defensive tackles to come off quickly, and you know they were the premium players in this draft. The quarterbacks always get pushed up just because there are so few, and that's why Bradford went number one. So there really wasn't any surprise in the top three picks there.
You know, Nolan, I think the closest thing to the first surprise was at number five with Eric Berry going to Kansas City, the safety out of Tennessee. And it's not because he's not the fifth best player in the draft. He may be better than that. It's just nobody wanted to believe, I guess, that Scott Pioli, the GM of the Chiefs, was going to take a safety there.
Yeah, he's really got a reputation for being a frugal spender. And there was a strong thought in league circles that he wouldn't spend top five money on a safety. And, you know, he proved everybody wrong. I think Berry's such a safe pick. You know, he's started everywhere he's been. There's really no downside. So I think Scott felt comfortable drafting him at number five for that reason.
You know, a lot of people thought Russell Okung would be the first offensive tackle drafted, possibly by Washington at number four. Washington went with Trent Williams, pretty good athlete out of Oklahoma. That made three Sooners in the top four picks of the draft. I can't remember that ever happening for one school. But at any rate, a mild surprise there. Okung falls to Seattle at number six. And then I thought at that point in time, guys, that's when it started to get a little crazy. You know, Joe Hayden, cornerback out of Florida, Cleveland, number seven. Rolando McClain, everybody's always surprised at what Al Davis does in Oakland. And so I think from there on out, we had some real drama in the draft.
Yeah, when you really look at it, I think the thing that really stands out is just how well teams match players to their schemes. You know, Trent Williams was the best zone blocking tackle in this draft, and that's exactly what the Redskins are going to be doing. I think the Raiders are looking to move to a 3-4 defense, and the key piece is the inside linebacker, which they did not have. They have not had for a number of years. So, you know, drafting Rolando McClain makes a lot of sense. They already picked up Cameron Wimbley and Quentin Groves in recent trades. So, you know, they got the linebackers that you need to run that 30 front.
All right, so we're matching schemes until we get to number 10. No, but at this point, Tyson Alualu, nice ball player out of California. I didn't see him in the first round of most mock drafts. I saw him high at the second round, maybe at the bottom of the first round. But to come up to number 10 and then have people scratching their head, and where are we going to put him in that Jacksonville front? I mean, to me, that will, at least until he becomes a star or doesn't, that's the reach of this draft.
I think that's the one that really stands out when you step back and look at it. But, you know, going back to the scheme, I think the Jaguars experimented last year with the 30 front. And the unique quality about Tyson Alualu is that he played in the 30 front at Cal, and he fits as both an end and a inside penetrator. So you could play him at either spot, and you could move the front back and forth between a 30 and 40. And I think he gives the Jaguars great flexibility that way to rotate their scheme.
Denver traded with San Francisco. The 49ers moving up at number 11 in the first round to take Anthony Davis, the offensive tackle out of Rutgers. Guys, I didn't see this run on offensive tackles that everyone had been bracing for in this draft. I know that a number of them were picked in the first round, obviously, but I didn't see the run early on offensive tackles, and I think that had an impact on this draft. Nolan, what do you think?
Yeah, really, at the end of the day, I think what it came down to with Brian Bulaga, his arms measured 33 and a quarter at the combine, and they measured 32 and a quarter at his pro day. You would think 1 inch really doesn't matter. I know it's been a hotly debated subject around the league with NFL general managers, just, you know, what the proper length is. You know, most teams would like 33 inches. You know, the shortest in the league is Jeff Backus at 32 and a half, and Bulaga fell below that, and for that reason, I think a lot more teams were looking at him as a guard, just like the Packers. I think they'll start him there. He's got the feet and the intelligence to play outside, but he's a guy that I think dropped just because of some of his physical limitations.
And, of course, the better question is, how did his arms get an inch shorter from late February to late March? You know, but that's the beauty of the combine and the stuff that happens when these kids are done playing. Bulaga was a hell of a player at Iowa, probably will be a good player in the NFL. You know, Nolan, I think another story of this draft is Josh McDaniels appears to have devoted himself to being a clone, a young clone of Bill Belichick. Nobody was more active trading down and then coming back up at the bottom of the first round to be the guy who went and grabbed Tim Tebow.
Yeah, I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. There were rumors about it leading up to the draft, but, you know, when you look at their offense, I think they needed a big boost. And, you know, they traded Jay Cutler last year because he didn't have the intangibles that they were looking for at the position. And Tim Tebow, I think they got everything they want from an intangible standpoint. He's smart. He's tough. He's an extremely hard worker. He's got every quality you can ask for from an intangible standpoint. So I think for that reason, Josh was very confident going up and taking a shot on him. I think he's comfortable with all the mechanics, and that, you know, feels comfortable that he can overhaul him in a year or two. And I think it's going to be an interesting developmental project there in Denver. We'll have to see how it works out.
One of the biggest surprises to me was that Jimmy Clausen did not make it into the first round of this draft, the quarterback out of Notre Dame. What were the factors involved there from what you're hearing, Nolan?
I think really the toe at the end of the day had an impact. You know, when you really study him, there were concerns about his accuracy. And just like Brady Quinn, you know, he's a little bit tight. And at the end of the day, I think he rubbed some teams the wrong way in interviews. And I think his, you know, the way he carried himself and his overall personality just was concerning at the quarterback position. We've seen Jay Cutler and affect, you know, his emotions on the field and just how it's negatively affected the team. And I think there were some of the same concerns there with Jimmy Clausen.
You know, Nolan, we've only got about 30, 40 seconds left, and it's way too early. We never talk winners and losers, but just instant impact. I love what the 49ers did, getting both Davis and Iupati, the tackle and the guard. And while Brandon Graham and Ryan Matthews are probably great players, the biggest spenders in terms of what they gave up to get what they got are probably the Eagles and the Chargers, aren't they?
Well, I would agree. And I think what the Niners did with their offensive line was a really impressive, great fit for Mike Singletary's offense. They should be able to pound the football and make the team much more competitive in the NFC West.
Coming up, we'll be back with Nolan Rocky's top 50 list in this weekend's college lottery when our draft edition of Pro Football Weekly continues. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, our NFL Draft Weekend Edition. And our analysis of the top 50 prospects in this weekend's NFL Draft, we're joined by Pro Football Weekly personnel analyst Nolan Rocky. And Nolan, let's start with the segment here where we start breaking down some of the players in the top 50s, but we'll do it by position. The quarterbacks we have picked out, Sam Bradford rated as the number 3 prospect overall on the draft, then Jimmy Clausen at number 11, Tim Tebow number 34, Colt McCoy ranked as the 38th best player in this draft as your last rankings came out just before the draft. Tell us a little bit about this group and how strong a group is it?
Overall, I don't think it's a very good group. These four players have a chance to become starters in the NFL. I think all of them are going to need some time. Jimmy Clausen's probably the most ready right now to step in. Sam Bradford clearly has the most upside. He has excellent accuracy. He's very intelligent, very tough. You know, he's got to learn on the slide and protect his body from injury, but he's got everything you want in a franchise quarterback, and I think he's going to be an outstanding pro. Tebow you know, he's really got to improve his accuracy and his vision. I think there's mechanical issues that are being worked on, and it's probably going to take him a couple of years, but he does have the toughness and the work ethic you want to develop, and I think he's a guy that could become a good player in time.
No, Nolan, I think the thing everybody's curious about is that when we talk about best athlete available, you're looking at football players, and that's how Tim Tebow sits at number 34 on that list, a few spots ahead of Colt McCoy. He's the third quarterback behind Bradford and Klausen. But do you have him ranked the third best quarterback prospect or just the 34th best athlete in this draft?
I think he can come in from day one and provide value on your team, whether that's running as a goal line, short yardage runner, or you know, developing as a quarterback. He's a guy that's going to help in the locker room. He's going to improve the football team, and he's going to bring value overall.
When you look at Colt McCoy, what do you project for him on this next level?
Colt McCoy, to me, is a guy that's going to need a couple of years. He's played in an unorthodox offense. You know, it's an unsophisticated, didn't require a lot at the college level, and I think it's going to take him some time to adjust to becoming more of a pro-style passer. You know, he's thinly built. He's been injury-prone. And he's got that offense to overcome, so he's got some issues. It'll take him a couple years.
Nolan, we look at the running backs, and you've got C.J. Spiller, the fourth best player or athlete in the draft at 28, Ryan Matthews from Fresno State. Chavid Best is 35, and right at 50, Joel McKnight. Now, I come back to Spiller, and is it fair to say he's got the misfortune of being the top-rated running back in an NFL that no longer likes to draft running backs in the top five or top ten?
It's the value to position has definitely decreased through the years. I think he's a guy that's going to bring value as a running back and as a returner, so he's got dual value. You know, he's a guy that's increasingly moved up boards, and I think teams are considering him in that top 10. He's got a lot of value.
Nolan, Ryan Matthews to me looks like, you know, when I look at Spiller and Best and McKnight, they seem to me like more situational type backs. Ryan Matthews is the guy you put out there on first, second, maybe even third down and go with him. Is he the most complete of the backs that you see in this draft?
He's definitely the most complete. He's the guy you could bring in from day one and let him carry the workload. You know, he can move the change. He's tough and physical, and, you know, he could be best in his own scheme. You know, I think the value is closer to the end of the first round than the top, but he's a guy that can do it all, and I think he's going to come in and be able to contribute for a team readily.
You know, Nolan, I hate to start anything with a negative, but as we look at the wide receivers, Dez Bryant, number 14 amongst athletes on your list, Demaryius Thomas at 20, the Golden Domer, Golden Tate at number 39, and Illinois' Aurelius Bennett 41. This appears to me to be one of the weakest groups of wideouts we've seen in a while. Now, you know, everybody knew heading into Thursday night that Bryant was a first-round talent. Where exactly he would go was based so much on the off-the-field stuff. And there's just, at least in the upper echelon of receivers, there's just no depth at the position this year.
There's really not. All the way throughout this draft, it's going to be tough to find a receiver. And Dez clearly is the most gifted, but, you know, the maturity issues, the lack of accountability, they will affect his draft stock, and I think they will affect the type of pro he becomes. Thomas is coming off injury as well, and you got Tate and Ben, who are both considerable projects. Ben's coming off a very marginal season with Illinois, really struggled with revolving quarterbacks and a new offense, and you know, he just had an average season this year, so I think his stack definitely suffered this season.
You know, Nolan, it's interesting. The two top receivers in this draft, Bryant and Thomas, both ran in the 4-5 range for the 40. That doesn't exactly knock the eyes out of the scouts, but by no means does it mean they're not going to be productive players in the NFL. I mean, Terrell Owens ran a 4.5 40 coming out, that type of thing. So are these guys, is Bryant more of a power wide receiver, and is Demaryius Thomas a hard guy to gauge because he played in the wishbone offense down at Georgia Tech?
They definitely didn't ask him to run a lot of routes, didn't run a full route tree at Georgia Tech. And Bryant only played four games as a junior, so there are concerns about both of them. But for their position, they're very big. They're physical after the catch. They can create with the ball in their hands. You know, they got definite upside, and I think they're going to wind up being the two most valuable rookies in that position.
We'll be back with more on Pro Football Weekly as we break down the top 50 in this weekend's NFL draft after these messages. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. Along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, I'm Wayne Larrabee. We're joined by personnel analyst Nolan Naraki, the author of Pro Football Weekly's draft preview book. And this segment, tight ends and offensive linemen. And Nolan, let's start with the tight ends. Jermaine Gresham, Rob Gronkowski are the two top tight ends in your rankings. going into the draft this weekend. But neither one played due to injury last year, so that certainly is a question mark, isn't it?
That's a big question mark, and I think it's kind of consistent with most of this draft class. You got a lot of guys that fit that category that are one-year wonders or coming off injuries, and you just don't know exactly what you're getting. But especially at this tight end class, you got the top two, Gresham. You know, to me, he's got Pro Bowl-type potential, outstanding receiver. You know, he didn't miss any practices. Even though he was hurt, he was there all year, really rallying around the guys, really working hard. I think he proved at his pro day and at the combine that he's fully healthy, ready to go, and is going to turn into a very good pro. Gronkowski, to me, there are more concerns, both about his health and just his overall commitment to the game. You know, as a blocker, he's solid. He's a good pass catcher as well, but you just worry about what he's going to bring. There's a chance that it may take him a little longer to develop and become a solid player.
You know, Nolan, I don't remember the last time I saw a draft board. Of your 14 top athletes, six are coming out of Oklahoma, two out of Oklahoma State and four out of Oklahoma. Of course, we talked about Dez Bryant and now Jermaine Gresham. We'll get to Gerald McCoy in just a moment and Bradford, the quarterback. But you look at the offensive tackle position, you've got Trent Williams out of Oklahoma, Russell Okung out of Oklahoma State, probably a notch ahead of him, and then Brian Bulaga in the middle. At the top of this offensive tackle group, they're pretty deep.
It's a strong class. Some teams say the strongest we'll see in a while. To me, Trent Williams is the most gifted athletically. It's not even close. He's a phenomenal athlete. I think in that zone scheme that they run at Oklahoma, you know, it fully shows. He could play any of five positions. He could do everything you want. You just worry a little bit about the work ethic and the passion. But he's a guy where the sky's the limit. If he wants to do it, he could be great.
Some have said Brian Bulaga, the offensive tackle out of Iowa, is the second safest pick in this draft. But a lot of people in the NFL see him as a right tackle, and some even project him at left guard in the NFL. He's not got the longest arms for a tackle, but may fit in very well at the guard spot. Where do you see him playing in the NFL?
Well, just given the great need at the left tackle position, I do think that's what he's going to be drafted to play. You know, clearly he has value to play four positions. Hasn't played center, but he's a guy at the left tackle position. You really want to have good feet. You want to be able to adjust. And I think the intelligence and knowing exactly what you're doing are truly the most important things. And I think he's got that quality. You know, he lines up and, he knows where his help is, and he could function when he's got a tight end next to him, or even if he's got to handle one-on-one assignments. Played well against Derek Morgan against Georgia Tech in the bowl game, and I think he'll be all right at left tackle.
Nolan, six more kids in the top 50 on your board at 15, offensive guard in college. Michael Iupati of Idaho, 21 is offensive tackle. Anthony Davis, 23 at center. Half of the Pouncey twins, Marquise Pouncey out of Florida. And then three more tackles at 26. You've got Vladimir Dukasi, and then you've got Roger Saffold at 30 and Bruce Campbell out of Maryland at 48. I come back to Iupati and to Pouncey. I don't remember the last time I saw a guard and a center ranked this high, and yet are they this high because both can project either to tackle or guard as well?
The versatility is huge for both of them. I think Iupati could kick out to left or right tackle. He's got the arm length. He's got the physicality. You know, he's got the footwork. He's probably best suited starting at left guard in the pros and keeping him there a year or two and then moving him out if needed. But just the ability to play tackle is what's driving up his value. Pouncey, he's got the ability to play all three spots inside, either guard or center position. He's a big player. He's physical. He shows some nastiness on tape. I think he's the best center to come out in a long time, and you know exactly what you're getting with him. You never want to take a guy that high at that position, but just knowing exactly what you're getting, I think teams are going to feel very comfortable doing it.
Nolan Iupati, the Pro Football Weekly personnel analyst, the author of the draft preview book, is with us. And Anthony Davis, the offensive tackle out of Rutgers, this is a guy who has a tremendous upside physically, but has had some problems off the field. And I wonder if you can kind of give us a little idea where he might fall in this draft, because there are a lot of teams who are attempting to take Anthony Davis, but others who kind of back off and say the character issue is something they're worried about right now. But physically, he seems to have all the tools.
Oh, he definitely has the tools. He's another guy, just how bad he really wants it. You know, can he keep his act together and mature like he's going to need to? He's only 20 years old. He's got a lot ahead of him, and with the right offensive line coach, I think he could be just fine. But it's going to take the right environment, the right structure, and he's going to have to mature and grow up.
All right, Nolan. Now, we knew heading into the draft that
Bruce Campbell out of Maryland belonged somewhere in the middle to the bottom of the second round. Of course, we had no idea what Al Davis would do or some of the other guys who love the workout warriors. Explain to our listeners what I'm talking about there with Campbell.
He looks every bit the part. He's a 500-pound bench presser. He got very, very long arms. You know, he looks just like you'd draw him up to look like at that position. But and the question is why it doesn't translate to the field. You know, there's too many mental lapses in his play, too many brain freezes. You know, the intelligence that is so important at that position, I think, is lacking. And he just struggles when stunts or, you know, movement comes at him. You know, he looks confused out there, and overall his play has been very inconsistent.
When we come back, we'll start taking a look at the defensive prospects that are on the draft board this weekend in the NFL when Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to this NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly. Personnel analyst Nolan Rocky is with us. We take a look at the defensive line prospects in this draft. And, Nolan, when you look at your top 50 listings, defensive interior dominates. The number one ranked athlete in the draft is defensive tackle Gerald McCoy, followed by defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh from Nebraska. At number nine, Derek Morgan, a defensive end. Brandon Graham is number 18, also a defensive end. Then you're back into the tackles with Dan Williams, Jarek Odrick. You know, a lot of tackle talent in this draft, more so than defensive ends.
I think it's definitely stronger inside. McCoy starts it all off. He's a better pass rusher than Ndamukong Suh to me. I think a lot of teams see it that way. It is split throughout the league. You know, Sue's going to come in and play the run very well, be very good on first and second down, where I think McCoy could be better as a pass rusher on every down, getting at the quarterback. You always feel him around your feet as a quarterback, and, you know, as a guy you got to worry about and scheme against. And you know, I think they're both going to be excellent pros.
Nolan, you look at your top two ends, Derek Morgan with a chance to go in the top 10 out of Georgia Tech, and then Brandon Graham out of Michigan. He played with a hand on the ground at Michigan, but I look at your outside linebackers. We've got Jerry Hughes coming up in the next segment, yet he's a guy who also had a hand on the ground. Graham, if he gets drafted as high as his ranking suggests, 18, 17, 20, that's more likely to be the outside rushbacker in a 3-4 than it is to put a hand on the ground, isn't it?
He's getting looks from both teams. I think he's got the power you like on the left side, and you know he's got enough athletic ability to drop and play outside linebacker. You know, it just depends on what scheme he's going to, but I think the overall scheme versatility is definitely a plus. Both 30 and 40 fronts will be looking at him, and he'll be on the draft board for most teams.
Dan Williams, the defensive tackle out of Tennessee, 3-year starter, played last year in Monty Kiffin's defense. Monty Kiffin, longtime defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How much influence does that have on how the draft or the scouts approach Dan Williams when they evaluate him?
I think you definitely trust what Monty tells you. He's been around the league a long time. He's very respected, and you know he excelled in that defense under Monty. So I think people are going to come and look at what he's done in that defense and think it'll project very well to the pros.
Nolan, this is the first of the position groups we've looked at where the depth in the second and third round looks almost as good as the kids up top. You've got 32nd on your board, Everson Griffin out of USC at defensive end. Then you got three more tackles in the top 50, Tyson Alualu, Lamar Houston out of Texas. You've got Linville Joseph. I mean, these are kids that somebody's going to get in the second round who, as I understand it, have a chance to be pretty productive pretty quickly.
It's rare that you can find that many defensive tackles, and it goes even deeper into the later rounds. You know, Tyson Alualu is unique in that he played the five technique position in the 30 front for Cal, but he's also versatile enough to kick inside and rush from the interior. So I think he's got a lot of value that way. You can play him anywhere on the line. I think teams are going to be excited about that. Where Houston, I think, also fits that three technique mold. You know, he's a good inside pass rusher. Linval Joseph out of East Carolina, He's more stout, and I think he's more ideally suited for a 30 front where he's going to stack the line and you know, play physical football.
Tell us a little bit about Jarek Odrick, the defensive tackle out of Penn State, Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year a season ago. Big guy inside who can play, apparently, right?
He's actually being looked at more as a five technique by 30 fronts. You know, play him on the outside, pretty much do the same things, stack the corner, play the run, and I think that's probably where his best value is going to be in the NFL.
Well, and Nolan, you mentioned the extra depth. We've been trying to stay with the top 50, but right outside your top 50 at 53, UCLA's Brian Price. Right behind him, Terrence Cody out of Alabama. Had the unfortunate pictures circulating on YouTube, but really a hell of a football player. And then you got a defensive end, Corey Wooten out of Northwestern, who prior to a serious knee injury, some people had in the top 15 or top 20.
Yeah, all three are gifted football players, and just goes to show you the depth overall at the defensive line position. I think Price is athletic enough to play inside. He's drawn some comparisons to a poor man's Warren Sapp. You know, when he's in shape, I think he is a very good player, very active, and could provide an inside rush. Cody is more of an inside plugger. I think that's where the value is going to be on first and second down. He's going to have to come out of the game on third. And Wooten, you know, if it weren't for the injury, we might be talking him, you know, in the top 50 picks. I think the injury pushed him down. He still hasn't been able to fully recover. He's got a lot of upside, and I think he played through that injury this year, and it should help him coming back next season playing healthy.
Coming up, we've got more draft analysis of the top prospects in this weekend's NFL College Lottery when Pro Football Weekly resumes. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish, and the author of the draft preview book, Nolan O'Rocky. I'm Wayne Larrabee. We break down the linebackers, both on the outside and inside. Nolan, let's start with the inside linebacker, Rolando McClain. When you take a look at this prospect, what do you see? Where does he project? Will he be a middle linebacker in a 4-3, or is he an inside linebacker in a 3-4?
Believe it or not, I think he projects to both. He's going to get looks as a 3-4 inside backer, but I think he's got enough length to be looked at outside as a Sam in a 4-3. So I think he's got some versatility. He's most likely going to wind up inside. He's got great instincts. He doesn't make quite as many wild plays and regularly show up consistently the way you'd like to see a top 15 linebacker, but he's definitely got that kind of impact. He's super smart. You know, he sets the front, and everybody listens to him. He's very respected, so I think he's got a lot of value both in the locker room and on the field.
Well, McClain, of course, the Butkus Award winner for 2009. You've got him 13th overall on your list, Nolan, and interestingly at 17th, outside linebacker Sergio Kindle, who finished, well, he played some end and some linebacker at Texas, and then at 22, you've got Sean Weatherspoon of Missouri. These two also finished right behind McClain in the Butkus ballot.
Yeah, they're all solid players. Weatherspoon, I think, projects best to the weak side in a 4-3 front. And I played inside as a senior, and I think he had too much weight on, bulked up to 250 pounds, and I think it slowed him down a little bit. You know, it created quite a stir at the Senior Bowl with how much he was talking. I don't know if he's earned the right to be as vocal as he has so far, and turned off some teams with his loud temperament. But you know, he, as a football player, strictly evaluating the tape, you know, he shows up quite a bit, and I think he's going to have a chance to start in the NFL as a rookie.
One of the guys who seems to be moving up the charts, Jerry Hughes, the outside linebacker out of TCU. In high school, he was a running back, kick returner. He also played baseball, but he came on. He was entering last year a one-dimensional pass rushing label on him, but he worked hard, became better defending the run. A lot of good talk about this kid and his character and the intangibles he brings to your locker room. Tell us a little bit about Jerry Hughes.
I think you hit it on the head with the intangibles. You know exactly what you're getting. I think he's got that pass rush ability that's going to be very attractive to a 3-4 front. You know, Sergio Kindle is not quite as well-rounded, you know, with the intelligence, with the character, with the injuries. I think there are concerns that are pushing him down team draft boards. And Jerry Hughes has been working the exact opposite way, moving up. I think 34 teams are going to be excited to get him, and he's got a lot of value for that reason, for the way he can rush the passer.
Well, and you've got Hughes sitting there 24. Nolan, next up on your list at 33 is Hughes' TCU teammate, Darryl Washington. You've got him in an outside backer position, but with his size, you almost wonder if he couldn't go either way.
Yeah, he's a guy that could do a lot of different things, and he's excellent in coverage. You know, he's got a ton of range. He's super athletic, makes plays all over the field. You know, he's a guy that can play Sam or weak side linebacker, so he's got a lot of value there. He's a three-down player.
Next up, you've got Sean Lee, an inside linebacker out of Penn State. Navarro Bowman, an outside linebacker out of a linebacker U, Penn State. Tell us about these two kids. You know, Sean Lee is a guy who has great instincts but has had nothing but injury problems the last 2 years. Bowman seems to have been a steady player on the outside for Penn State in his career.
Yeah, Sean's definitely the steady Yeti. He's the guy, you know, he can play inside or outside, and you know you're going to get the same consistent level of play every season. You know, the injuries are the biggest concern that could push him down a bit. But you know, he's a guy that, as long as he stays healthy, he's going to be a solid player, just like Paul Posluszny was for the Buffalo Bills. Bowman's got a little more explosiveness and more range, but there are bigger concerns about the character and just how he's going to affect the locker room. I think the overall character grade could push his value down.
Well, Nolan, again, right outside your top 50 at 52, a kid that fascinates me, Brandon Spikes from Florida. Fascinates me because he was so remarkably productive at Florida. He seems to have great size to play a couple different linebacker positions, and yet there's something that's knocking him down a notch. Is it the athleticism?
Yeah, the foot speed is the main thing. He just, you know, he clocked above 5 flat in the 40 at his pro day, and I think teams are concerned about his ability to get to the corner. You know, there's times where it looks like he's spinning in place like a cartoon character when he's trying to get to the corner. He just doesn't have that extra burst or juice to get outside. So, you know, he's a guy that's strictly got to play inside. He's got a strong vocal presence, will be very strong in the locker room. I think despite the time, he's going to turn out to be a good football player.
Next up, we wrap up our player evaluations with a look at the defensive backs. You are listening to a special NFL Draft edition of Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. It is NFL Draft Weekend, the annual college lottery. The defensive secondary dominated by strong talent at the top of the safety position. Top two players in the secondary are listed at safety. And Nolan, it's number six pick free safety Eric Berry out of Tennessee. Number 10 free safety Earl Thomas. Tell us about Berry. There are some scouts that really feel very strongly about this player as being one of the safest picks in the draft.
I think he's been very steady throughout his career, came in and made an immediate impact. You know, he's a blow-up tackler, very physical. I think that's what stands out most about his game, just how hard he hits. He's got great instincts, always around the ball, great ball skills, very good range. You know, he's athletic enough even to play corner if you wanted him to. So I think the versatility there is very attractive. You know, the main thing with these safeties, both Berry and Earl Thomas, the big question that comes up is how highly can you draft one? And there's a strong debate in the NFL right now that you can't take a safety in the top 10.
Well, and you know what's so interesting about that to me, Nolan, is in some respects it's become a safety league. I mean, when you look at the way a Troy Polamalu or an Ed Reed or Brian Dawkins or Darren Sharper have dominated the field the last couple of years, everybody wants one. And it seems like the last 3 or 4 years, there haven't been that many top prospects at the position.
It's been down in recent years, and it's become a passing league, so I couldn't agree more that there's value in the position. It's just how it equates to payroll and trying to keep it all balanced, and that's where NFL general managers are coming into conflict, trying to keep it all balanced.
Let me ask you about these two top safety prospects, Eric Berry of Tennessee, Earl Thomas of Texas. Can either of them slide over and cover a slot receiver or man the outside position at a cornerback spot on a third down situation?
I think they both have that type of coverage ability. They're both rangy. The range is probably the number one trait that stands out about both of them, just how they're able to come off of the far hash and come across the field and make plays all the way across on the other sideline. I mean, you see that on tape, and you know, I think it's a trait that should project well the cornerback if they want him to play in the slot.
Well, and Nolan, the next five kids on your list at 16, Joe Hayden out of Florida, Patrick Robinson out of Florida State at 27, at 29, Alabama's Kareem Jackson, you've got Devin McCourty at 31 out of Rutgers, and Kyle Wilson out of Boise State at 37, all five of them projecting as corners, and that's pretty good depth at the position. They're all potential first-round grades.
Yeah, I don't know if there's truly an elite cornerback in this draft. Joe Hayden comes the closest to being one. Yeah, he's been a very solid 3-year starter at Florida, matched up against great competition and shown he could shut guys down like A.J. Green. So he's got great ability. But the rest of the class, to me, you just don't know that you're going to find a number one corner in that group.
Well, you know, when you look at these guys at the cornerback spot, one guy who has kind of risen up the charts of late is Kyle Wilson, the cornerback out of Boise State. Tell us a little bit about him because, you know, again, when you look at the competition he played against week in, week out, maybe not the best, but they did see some good teams in postseason play, and he did well.
He's a solid player. To me, he clutches and grabs a little bit more than you'd like to see a top-flight corner. I'm not sure the ball skills are truly first-round caliber. He's a player that certainly is going to warrant first-round attention, but come into the league with those type of expectations. But, you know, whether he ever plays up to that potential remains to be seen.
Nolan, rounding out your top 50 at 43, free safety Morgan Burnett out of Georgia Tech at 44. You got another corner, Jerome Murphy. And then right outside the top 50 at 51, Chris Cook, a corner out of Virginia. And two kids who are fascinating, free safety Nate Allen out of South Florida at 55, and then all the way down to 60, USC's Taylor Mays. But let me come back to Morgan Burnett for a minute. Is he a Mike Malamula type? I mean, is he a kid who on the field didn't get it done but blew people away so much on his pro day that he's going to get drafted much higher than his production would warrant?
I think that the workout numbers definitely helped his cause. He had a better junior year than a senior season, and I think he's got the tools to be a back-end safety, and that's what teams are really seeking. So, you know, from that standpoint, he certainly has value.
Taylor Mays out of USC, the free safety, you know, again, a prospect that a year ago was really being hailed as one of the top players at the safety position. Some teams have given him a fourth-round grade. What happened to Taylor Mays?
I think when you really look at the player and study him closely, you see that he struggles in man coverage. You know, his lateral agility is very average. He struggles to keep up with receivers running past him. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about his instincts, about his ball skills. You know, 5 career interceptions and 51 games as a starter. I think it clearly shows there's a lack of production on the ball. So, you know, in a lot of ways, I think he's got it, looks like Tarzan and plays like Jane, and I think he's going to have a hard time ever living up to his potential.
Pro Football Weekly personnel analyst Nolan Iraki. Nolan, thank you very much. Stay tuned. The Publisher's Pen is next on Pro Football Weekly. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
Wayne, I really hate to do it because this week is all about the NFL college draft and exciting fresh starts and new players for every team. But a bigger story this past week, quite frankly, was the status of Ben Roethlisberger, the 2-time Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, he's still a Steeler. That should surprise nobody. In spite of the 6-game suspension he received from Commissioner Roger Goodell and the well-broadcast rumors throughout the league that the Steelers did consider trading him on the Thursday before the draft and the Wednesday before the draft. Now, the Steelers have since denied that they were shopping him, but there's no question that I know at least 3 teams that they talked to about him, and they wanted to find out. It wasn't let's get him out of town right away. They were exploring their options, and they wanted to see if that was one. It turned out not to be. So we come back to Ben Roethlisberger and where he's at, where he should be, and what is reasonable, because, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't point out at the top he hasn't been found guilty of anything because he hasn't been charged with anything. And that's where you get onto this slippery slope of we are now making ourselves, or in this case, the NFL and Roger Goodell are making themselves judge, jury, and executioner. But I stop there and say, you know what? Maybe he hasn't been charged. Maybe he hasn't found guilty. But here's the best thing we can say about Ben Roethlisberger, because the police reports are public record. He is guilty of finding a 20-year-old young lady who was far too inebriated to take care of herself and taking advantage of her and having sex with her. And that's just, it's not right. Whether it rose to rape or assault, who knows? But this is a bad guy. And this is the second time something like this has happened. It's what they call a pattern of behavior. Now, he can get all the counseling in the world that he wants. He can get whatever help he seeks. He can try and remake his life. To me, the biggest question the Pittsburgh Steelers face is how does he face his teammates in the locker room? How does he look in the mirror? And how long is it going to take for this to get better from here?
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to Nolan Iraki, the author of Pro Football Weekly's draft preview book. Randy Myers, our producer-engineer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. Now for Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening to this special NFL Draft Edition of Pro Football Weekly.